Jack Jones and Speed Christmas Motorsport Messages!
Howdy, y'all. Danica Patrick here. I love the Christmas season. I get to eat loads of meat and treat animals badly. Mmm. What do I want for Christmas? I want an orange, misogynistic, narcissistic man, baby, as the leader of my country. I know I have to wait till January for that, but it's coming. You know what they say? Change is coming. Yee-haw! Y'all come back now.
Hello, this is Carlos Sainz from Ferrari. This is Carlos Sainz from Williams. For Christmas, I want my new team to live up to its status as the team with the second greatest number of constructor championship wins and win the championship again. Although, to be honest, I would imagine we'll probably struggle to get out of Q1 most weekends. And it was the only seat available. But hey, Merry Christmas.
Hey up, Jean Guagnol speaking. Happeners like, over this year's festivities I shall be having a traditional Christmas Chinese meal of tripe and onions. Then I'll go for a walk perhaps over on Hill Cleanlow with me whippet, Valtteri. Bye, Eck. Christmas in Sheffield, it'll be grand.
Hi, Lance Stroll here. I don't want anything for Christmas. I already have everything. So there.
G'day. This is Jack Doon. More hope for the new year is that I'm not replaced by some other hotshot after 5 races. Here, Merry Christmas.
Hello, welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed. I'm Gareth, he's Zog.
Hello.
And this episode, 505, will be what is essentially our Works Christmas Do. But before we can have the full Works Christmas Do party in a little while, Zog and I have got to get any other business out of the way. We've got to talk about the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Did you watch it live, Zog?
I did.
I was more excited about watching that race than I thought I could be. It was all about the Constructors' Championship. And maybe I had a vested interest in it, right? Did I care whether Ferrari won it or whether McLaren won it? I don't know. I just wanted to see a great battle to the line.
Well, let's think. Did you care who won that? Were you just so interested in the competition, or what was your? I mean, because I was excited for the race, despite the fact that the drivers' championship was already settled. For me, a decent part of that was down to the fact that McLaren and Ferrari were going to be scrapping it out for the constructors. McLaren haven't won it for a long time.
The last time they won it, I was there. 1998, Suzuka. I was there with Violet. It was incredible. I should have been there for this one, really, shouldn't I? I wasn't. But, yeah, did I care?
Oh, well, be there for the next one.
You must have had a preference for McLaren, because I know you're fond of Norris, but you love Leclerc too, right? And Sainz.
Yeah, I do. Well, I mean, my sort of F1 fandom is a little bit promiscuous, I guess. I don't know. I mean, for me, I'm not a hardcore lifelong fan of any one team or one driver, but McLaren has always been a team that I've had a lot of affection for and have supported. You know, the first stickers I ever stuck up on my bedroom door were McLaren stickers from I picked them at a British motor show sometime in the 1970s. I've got a bit of. I'm historically a McLaren fan. I think that what Zak Brown has done with the team in the last few years has been terrific. Yeah, I think I was personally a little bit sceptical about him initially. I didn't kind of warm up to him, but he's an absolutely tremendous team boss, leader. Yeah, I've become a huge Zak Brown fan. I was totally rooting for McLaren. I'm delighted they won it. It clearly meant a lot to them. But you know what? I think I'm going to be a Ferrari fan next year because yeah. you know having my yeah. my like I say, my fan is pretty good. I tend to like drivers more than teams.
Yeah.
And there's always more than one driver in the field who I want to win. You know, so
yeah.
I'm a big Lewis Hamilton fan. Lewis Hamilton going to Ferrari with Leclerc as the other driver, and I love Leclerc.
It's beautiful.
I'm going to be a proper Ferrari fan for the first time since Alesi was driving for them.
Oh.
So this is...
Or Kimi, when Kimi drove for them. I loved that. We forget that. He won a championship for them, didn't he?
Yeah. And again, yeah. But I think I was really more... Well, it sounds a bit dismissive to say I was probably more of a Kimi fan than a Ferrari fan, but I love Ferrari. I love Ferrari in motorsport as well as, you know, on the road. But it's tended to be, you know, Ferrari in endurance racing and GT racing that I've, you know...
you're passionate about.
Active fan of, rather than in Formula One. But next year that changes.
Yeah. Well, you know, I guess I was a Jackie Stewart fan. That wasn't a problem. He always drove for... Tyrrell, then it was James Hunt, really, but I didn't know his Hesketh period. I only knew him at McLaren. And then my next big hero after that, really, was Damon.
Damon, yeah.
Yeah, who I'd followed from Formula 3000. I heard about him before he came into Formula 1. So that was like a real love. And when Damon left Williams, I went to Arrows and I supported him at Arrows. And then when he went to Jordan, I supported Damon at Jordan. But when Damon left Jordan, I kind of stayed with Jordan. It was, I don't know, the rule of a vacant seat. Mm. Oh, I've got to stay there until my next favourite driver comes along. And then Giancarlo Fisichella came to drive for them, who I was very supportive of for very many years. But you're right, you tend to, that's a lovely way, you're a promiscuous F1 fan. That's lovely.
Yeah, I'm an F1 tart.
But hey, listen, as F1 tarts, we were treated to a display which I think a great many of us found a great relief. Lewis's drive from, where did he start? 18th, 14th, 212th,
14th. 14th,
yeah. To finish fourth and to pass George. I know he was on better tyres, but this is how you win races, right? At that point, he was on better tyres. To take George, and I don't think he even had DRS at that point. That was a wonderful bit of bravery and competence and reassurance that Lewis hasn't lost it, because there are doubts. There are no doubts anymore after that display.
I think we've all had those. Well, a lot of us have had those doubts. He's expressed them himself. You know, he said, I'm just slow.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that may have been in a, you know, just a low, slightly low and, you know, wearing your heart on your sleeve moment. Could even have been a bit of, you know, a bit of mind games, a bit of trying to make out that he maybe has lost a little bit going into next year to really mess with Leclerc's head, when actually Lewis turns out to be as quick as he always has been. Who knows? I don't think it's that last one, but that's not entirely impossible. But sure, it was a demonstration that he still has it. And I think it would give a lot of reassurance to fans and to Ferrari that with Lewis stepping into their car next year, that he's going to be able to, you know, deliver over a race and over a season. Because, you know, Leclerc is incredibly quick over a single lap.
Yeah.
Russell has out-qualified Hamilton by sort of 2-1 margin, I think, more or less this year. But if you take it away from a single qualifying lap and you go to, you know, a whole race where an older head and a bit more experience can give you an advantage, and a whole season when that's even more true, I think it looks a lot more like Lewis will be a real asset for Ferrari rather than, you know, a slightly tired old hand coming on to back up a young hotshot.
How old were Fangio and Giuseppe Farina and Ascari?
Oh, blimey.
Wasn't Farina 46 or something?
I was going to say, yeah, I think he was in his 40s. And did Fangio maybe even race on into his 50s?
Ooh, interesting.
But yeah, but they did race at a, you know, much greater age than the oldest F1 drivers now. But it was a very different era.
Well, what I was thinking there was, you know, if Lewis goes there and jumps into a car which is a top three car, and just about fails to be world champion in his first year, he'll give it a go on his second year. Now, if he gets into a car that's good enough to be a world championship car, which is quite possible, they're looking very, very solid at the moment, then Lewis stands a chance of winning that world championship. Now, what happens if he gets a world championship in his first year with Ferrari? He's now clicked that magical number of one more than Schumacher and has become the undisputed greatest of all time.
Mm.
Would he quit, or would he then try and push it to the no one's ever going to beat me sort of thing? Has he got the fight in him? He may well be reinvigorated. You know, the drama of the story that is about to unfold is going to go one or two ways. That's what I'm getting at. It's either going to be epically glorious or epically heartbreaking in one way or the other. I'm going for glorious.
Okay, I'm going to push back against that a bit. I'm not sure that it's necessarily going to be, you know, it doesn't have to be either heartbreak or nirvana. You know, it's quite likely.
Why?
Well, because, you know, often you just end up in the middle. You end up with a mean. Yeah. And, I think, you know, you're most likely to end up with an outcome where Lewis Hamilton at Ferrari turns out to be pretty much on the, you know, a similar kind of performance to Charles Leclerc. And his performance will, over the year, be very strong. Not enough to win the world championship, but not poor enough to embarrass anybody.
Mm.
You know, it'll be really good.
Okay. Yeah,
there you are. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm saying
it's not bipolar.
He's going to be really good at Ferrari next year. He's not going to win the world championship.
Maybe.
I would love it if he did. I really would.
Yeah. Maybe I'm colouring that with the fans' viewpoint, because anything less than utter glory will be heartbreak for me. I just want it to
happen.
Yeah,
sure. And that's a legitimate fan viewpoint. 100%.
But isn't it great, right? Here we are at the end of a 24-race season plus 6 sprints. Is that what it was? And deeply satisfied. I loved that season. Fair play. Max winning. We've talked about this. Fair play, McLaren taking the constructors, epic consistency from them, huge respect to them, deep, deep respect. And I think F1's in very good shape. They're a tight bunch, aren't they? Tighter than ever.
Yeah, I agree. The rules as they are now have set up a very, very close, hard-fought championship throughout the year. You know, it wasn't wrapped up until the end of the year, so yeah, that is fantastic, and that's going to continue next year. You talked about McLaren being consistent. One thing that we could do with more consistency in is, I think, around some of the stewarding and some of the decisions in awarding penalties to drivers. This is never going to be the easiest area to deal with, you know, because you're always trying to make rules. Drivers are always going to push against those rules as much as they can to get whatever performance they can or advantage they can. And there's often a judgment to be made. But we could do with more consistent penalties, I think.
The stewarding at each race is inconsistent because you're not playing on exactly the same level playing field every time. Every circuit comes with its own quirks, and that requires highlighting quirks in the regulations which can allow someone to gain a benefit at a corner or not, you know, and that, so they'll police some corners harder than others. And then the driver lunge, you know, what do we do about a driver lunge? Well, did you notice that Max got a 10-second penalty? There were, I think, 3 10-second penalties issued for this. And it used to be a 5-second penalty. And the reason that it's now 10 seconds, apparently, is that the drivers asked for this. The driver said there should be greater penalties for lunges, and we want it to be 10 seconds now. So, interesting, you talk about the drivers pushing back. That's, in some ways, the opposite. The drivers pushing for harder penalties in that instance.
I don't think I said the drivers are pushing
against
back.
Rules and regulations.
Yeah. Oh, no. What I mean is that any time you create rules, what I mean is that the drivers are always going to go as far as they can
within the rules
to get advantages within the rules. And if there's an ambiguity to be exploited,
you'll take it.
or a weakness to be exploited, that, you know, that they will tend to do that. I don't think I was saying they're pushing back against any kind of regulations. They're just, you know, doing the competitive thing that they are going to do behaviourally, of just maximising their performance within the space you allow them.
Yeah, they are competitors, and that competitiveness right to the line, like we saw with Lewis, like we saw with every other driver. Oh, Hulk, the joy of Hulk having a good race was, I can't believe it. I'm very much looking forward to next season. What a shame Hulk's going to be in a bloody Sauber, though. That ain't going to go quick, is it?
No, probably not.
Oh, hey, listen, right, we've done F1. Should we do Christmas?
Go on then.
I'm thrilled to say that we've just received this message from Springsteen. Yep, Loose Springsteen.
Hey, everybody! You hear that sound? Yeah, that's the sound of Christmas just beyond the apex of the next corner. You know, Christmas can be a difficult time for lots of reasons. It's an emotional period, a time where you measure change. So I believe that it's really important that this time of the year we think about those less fortunate than ourselves. People like Kevin Magnussen, Valtteri Bottas, Zhou Guanyu, Franco Colapinto, Daniel Ricciardo, and dear little Logan Sargeant, and maybe even Sergio Perez too. Drivers who don't have a race seat in Formula One anymore. And it's equally difficult for those who are changing teams too. Drivers such as Hulk, Esteban Ocon, Carlos Sainz, even Lewis Hamilton. So this is a song for them.
No.
Christmas and Gareth Jones on Speed.
Welcome to the Gareth Jones on Speed Works Christmas Party, which is what this is, the most wonderful time of the year. And we are indeed quorate. Every member of the current on-air on-speed team is with us. Zog's here, I'm here, and joining us now from his kibbutz in South London is Alex Guy.
My nest of shame. Hi.
Why is it a nest of shame? I've been there. It's a wonderful place.
Oh, but after Saturday, it's just shameful.
Good. That's what the Christmas season is for. Excessive partying, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The shame fades a little slower than the hangover, I believe.
Yeah, and the hangover is taking a while to shift because even though I'm definitely not 25 anymore, I do try to drink as though I am.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear it.
I'm going to bed after this.
Let's look back. Let's get this over and done with so you go back to bed. No, let's look back at 2024 whilst we're in the closing laps of the Grand Prix. That was 2024. And let's look back at highlights and stuff that we particularly remember and particularly love. Alex, have you got a favourite car of the year?
Ooh, it's been a good year for motors, hasn't it? I'd love to say it was the Renault 5, but I've not driven it, which is kind of annoying. I have a soft spot for the new Vantage. That was very good fun. But actually, because it's so left field, that Leckie DeLorean conversion I did, I'm going to remember that one for a fair old while, because it finally got the powertrain it deserved.
Wow. Is that this year?
Yeah.
Wow.
It was. Yeah, it was early this year.
I'd forgotten. Oh, that would have given you immense personal joy.
Yeah.
And it improved a car that is flawed, right?
So very flawed, yes.
We love the
Not exactly
cars.
A production vehicle, but it's the one that made the biggest impression on you, so
yes.
That's it.
That's a nice one. How about you, Zog? You got a favourite car of the year?
Probably the Porsche 718 Cayman GTS. That would be...
Of course it's a Porsche.
I think, you know, that would be my... I love a sports car.
Yeah.
If I'm browsing, you know, new cars of the year and thinking which one of those would I want to have sitting outside. Yeah, I think, Cayman GTS would be my pick, I think.
Why?
Because it's a proper sports car. It's also feels like it's one of those things that's a little bit of a kind of last hurrah for a very refined but old school sports car with an internal combustion engine. It's a nicely evolved, beautifully dynamic vehicle. Yeah, it ticks a lot of my personal boxes. I love a Porsche. It's doing that thing very well. And maybe it'd be one of the last chances to pick up something like that if we're considering, you know, new vehicle options. So, yeah, that's why I think it has a slightly special place.
I think you're right. Having driven the... was it the 718 Boxster? Is that what it was? The four-cylinder Boxster? Gosh, I enjoyed that. And the Cayman is an improvement on that. And in terms of being usable and joyful and planted, it was breathtaking. So, yeah, I would concur with that. My favourite car of the year? Ooh, I'm really struggling. There are two I'm flip-flopping between. One is the Aston Vanquish, which is a bit of a left-field one for me. You wouldn't expect me to pick a Vanquish or an Aston as my favourite car of the year, perhaps. But not that I have anything against Aston. Quite the opposite. I adore them. But there is something so brilliantly caricature and grandiose about the Vanquish. That grille, I have never seen more Aston Martin grille on any Aston Martin ever than on that car. And yet I love it. You know, you can go too far, right? But I look at that and I go, yeah, be proud of what you are, you know? It warms me, and I like the roundness, the organic, lithe muscularity to it. I adore that. But then I thought, yeah, but hang on. There's also the Gordon Murray Automotive T50, isn't there?
Ah, yes.
You know, pure, the sound, chorus, the sing, song, quality, the shrill drama, the opera, and the minimalism of it at the same time.
And you're a big Gordon Murray fan, so
who isn't? We all are, right?
Well, of course. But you're even more so. You know, you're borderline obsessive, I think.
You think, really?
In a good way, you know. You rightly have a lot of admiration for his work.
Yeah. We need people like him. So, yeah, those are my...
Yeah, we do. Really good, imaginative engineers. These are people that effect tremendous positive change in the world. Yeah, we really do need more people like Gordon Murray.
I was freestyling in my brain the other day, you know, thinking like an engineer, trying to work out a solution for runoff areas in motorsport circuits. There are two fields of thought. Either you have gravel or you have a paved surface. Now, the paved surface will slow the cars down quicker because there's more grip than gravel, right? In compact circuits, it's hard to have gravel. And you need to keep the crowds close to the circuit, right? So the runoff areas need to be as small as possible. And gravel is a problem because you can't do it in small circuits. The other one, the paved area, means you go off track and you can come back on and gain a benefit. So that's what changes the rules. So I was thinking, is there an engineering solution to this? Is there some kind of smart, live, organic, neurally managed... Imagine AstroTurf with servo motors driving every single blade. That could give you low grip for a moment and then reconfigure to give you high grip and would react like tendrils on an enemy to surfaces. That would be a living surface that could give you the benefits of both a gravel runoff area and a paved runoff area. I mean, that's an incredible engineering problem with an impossible engineering solution. But you've got to start with that. What does it say? For humans to reach the moon, we had to first dream of reaching the moon. Imagine what it could be first, and then try and work out how it might be possible.
Well, the engineers have to work with the materials, the technology that is available to them. And I think you're asking for new technology, new materials there. That's a big ask. But
so was John F. Kennedy when he made that epic speech. We will build a giant rocket ship made of new metal alloys, some of which have not yet been invented. He said that.
True. Yeah, fair point.
Right, sorry, I got onto one there. So, I'm trying to solve the runoff area problem. How do we get onto that? Imaginary thinking by engineers. Well done. And Gordon Murray is one of them. All right, motorsport. Alex, best motorsport moment for you? Formula One.
Well, no, it's not Formula One, but we know why. It was being a little bit drunk and standing just in front of the Dunlop Bridge at Le Mans, having one car of every class cascade past me in perfect order. It was excellent. It was just absolutely mega. The race this year was fantastic. The atmosphere was excellent. It was big and bright and bouncy. It felt properly special. It was one of those races where you can wander around the circuit and you can meet lots of people and have a chat with lots of people, but everywhere around there was some sort of moment and some sort of thing happening to make it special for everyone who was there live. And yeah, that was really cool. So yeah, Le Mans this year, that was nice.
You missed two Le Mans, didn't you, when they had the lockdown Le Mans? But I think you've been to all the others in the last sort of 10 years or something like that.
No, not quite that. I think my first one was 2012. It's been my sixth or seventh this year.
It is overwhelming. It's kind of overstimulating. Mm. It's glorious. And having missed it for two or three years like I did, to go back to it this year was my motorsport moment too. I have to agree on that. And exactly what you said, it's that start when they all go past and they've just played also Sprach Zarathustra. I'm always moved to tears of utter joy that this display of heroism is happening in front of me. That was it. Being back at Le Mans was my highlight of the year, same as yours, Alex. See, you weren't there with us this year, I'm sad to report.
I wasn't. No, I'm sorry to miss that. But my motorsport highlight of the year, I think, will be Leclerc winning the Monaco Grand Prix. That was just a great moment. Yeah, wonderful, exciting, very talented young F1 driver, first Monegasque driver in the sport for a long time. My memory's failing there, but first Monegasque driver for a long time, not the only one, and for him to win
Louis Chiron.
There you go.
Was another one off of being the named after the Bugatti Chiron and being an unconscionable shit
or a cad, as they used to say back in. Beyond being a cad, this was being a proper shit.
I cannot remember for the life of me which female rally driver it was that he reported as being a Nazi sympathiser and destroyed her life. But he did that allegedly. It's something I read somewhere. Like, hang on.
That was a false allegation. Monegasque driver, yeah, while you're looking that up, yeah, just that was just great to see the young Monegasque driver taking a win at his home race. Heartwarming, great to see Leclerc having more success in any case. But that was certainly my highlight of the year.
Yeah, I get that. We have great love for Leclerc, as we were discussing earlier on. He's a magnificent driver. He hasn't always been as lucky as he needs. And for him to get a win in his hometown... you know,
Helen Nice was the racer.
There was a very good book written about her a few years ago, The Bugatti Queen.
Yes, just reading the piece that I first used for research years ago. It was a Monte Carlo rally of 1949 when Chiron met and destroyed her. Before the rally started, the rally held a party for the women drivers in the event in Monaco, as Jaco wrote in their official profile of the nickname Bugatti Queen. At this party, Louis Chiron walked up to Nice and loudly proclaimed to the crowd that she had worked for the Gestapo during the war, that her presence was a disgrace, and that she should be barred from competition. He had no proof, and Nice attempted to contact the rally's organiser to refute the accusation, but the organiser was a friend of Chiron's and provided no help. The accusation killed all of her sponsorships and her career. Hmm. And also, he got his start in life, so the story goes, this is very boring. Well, it's not boring, but it wasn't where I was thinking today was going. The story goes that Ettore Bugatti was very happy that he finally had a Monegasque driver, but was less happy to find out that the Monegasque driver wasn't a wealthy Monegasque. He made his money by dancing with ladies in the hotel.
Right.
Oh, hello.
Some of these ladies provided him with sponsorship and cars.
Hello. Well, it's a good way to make a living.
Well-worn route to success.
Shaggy way to the top and accuse people of being a Nazi. Happy Christmas, everyone.
I love traditional Christmas.
Allegedly, dance with ladies to the top. I'm not sure how litigious the Chiron family is.
I'm not sure about libel laws in other countries, but in the UK, it is not possible to libel the dead.
That is good to know.
it is very useful to know on occasion.
It is possible, however, to label the dead. Dead, alive, put a sticker on. That one's dead, that one's alive. Yeah. Okay, we've dealt with motorsport moment of the year. We didn't mention, and I think this is an honourable mention, because I think this was more than a motorsport moment of the year, and that was Lewis announcing he's going to Ferrari. That was such a bombshell this year that it was sort of, no, really? Really? And when it did happen, it was like, oh my God, it's on. And that even reached outside of the world of motorsport. It got into other news, that one. And I'm very proud of that. I like it when my sport gets out to people who don't care.
Well, and as a quick note, of course, I mean, that is one of the reasons why Ferrari were happy to pay as much money as they did to hire Lewis Hamilton. Because, yeah, it's the kind of signing, it's the kind of collaboration, Hamilton and Ferrari, that does make an impression beyond the world of motorsport, that does get the eyes of the broader public on you. And that's worth a lot to Ferrari.
We're going to save our hopes for the future for the next bit. But first, this. Professor Sir Stanley Unwind, presentee for Notivity. Yes. And there were, in the same county, three shepherd loads. Alan Shepherd, a German shepherd, and Shepherd's Bush, all singing Abide With Me in a field, whilst playing Keepy Uppy over their flock by night. And Lola, the angle of the Lord came upon them at 90 degrees to the perpendicular, and the glory hole of the Lord Hesketh shone on a roundabout. And they were sore and deeply afraid, load. And the angle said unto them, Fear not, and other methods of tying string. For behold, and also A-hold, and what happened to C-hold? I bring you good tidiness and great deep joy, which shall be to all people and also everyone.
four of you is Bjorn Waldegard on this day in the city of Dave Richards, the Saviour, which is Tom Christensen, the Lord of Le Mans. And this shall be a roadside unto you two and three. Ye, also known by other rappers' names, shall find a member of the Sugar Babes, wrapped in swaddling racing overalls with a lying manager. And stubbornly, there was, with the angle, a multitude of the heavenly silver spirit, oh, wafty pleasure, saying, glory to God in the highest on the top step of the podium, and on earth, peace and Goodyear tires will go toward men, and also men. Now, after cheese was invented in Bethlehem, behold, three wide men from the east, probably Ipswich, came to Jerusalem Lode, saying, and did those feet in ancient times walk it up old Trickley Hill upon England Mountain Greeny? And also, where is he who has been bought king of the apple juice? For we have seen his pole star in the east and have come to Worsnip. They departed their fringes, and behold, the Mitsubishi Stadium which they had seen in the east went before them. They went after it, because before them was the thing that they were going after. It came and stood over where the young Adrian Childs was. When they saw the start, they rejoiced, then realised they had started incorrectly, so they rejoiced, oh folly, with exceedingly good cakes and deep joy. And when they had come into the house, which was not a house, but a sort of barney stable mode, they saw the poor young child with his mother, Mary Christmas. Tock Flollop fell down and furnished him. Ho-ho! And when they'd opined their treasury boxers, they presented him grifts. The song Gold by Spandau Ballet. Frank Spencer, some folly to have 'em, and a mirror. And then Al lived happily ever after, Lode, until all bad cavalry cross-nailing happened. Oh, deep folly. Merry Fimble. Gifts are a massive part of the whole Christmas experience. Whether you're a child or an adult, there's always pressure to do the gifting thing. Get it right, right? Oh, it's hard. Oh, and sometimes you get terrible, terrible gifts. Now, we've managed to avoid this on Gareth Jones on Speed by having a tradition of buying virtual gifts where we can buy something for each other with unlimited resources, say, if I could give you anything, I would give you this. And it brings us brief and true joy, gentlemen, doesn't it? It's nice to be able to do that. Absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've done that. So the challenge this year was to try and find a gift that the other one of us would absolutely hate. Who wants to go first? Who's bought a terrible gift for who?
I'll go. Okay. So, terrible gifts for the both of you. Gareth, okay, you recently picked up a new vehicle. Obviously, you want to keep it in tip-top condition. You know, I do.
Gas-top condition.
So, I figured some car cleaning products, you know, a car cleaning kit of some kind would be good. Marvellous. And so, I asked a young design student to come up with a blue sky thinkings, no preconceptions. You don't need to sort of stick too close to preconceived ideas about car cleaning kits. So they come with a lovely package for you of some gold lame polishing cloths.
Gold lame,
which will work with the, they chose Ajax scouring powder for your paint work. And then in order to keep your interior leather and plastic in tip-top condition, nourished to perfection, some very, very fine raw artisan fish oil from the North Atlantic. You've got pilchard oil for the leather, mackerel oil for your plastic. There you go.
Well, I would accept them in that way that you're always told to accept gifts politely.
And then shove them away and never use them. Yes, that's absolutely what this kit was for. And for Alex, now, obviously you have a new household member. A cat.
I do indeed, yes. Otter T. Catterson. She's currently sleeping on my side of the bed and in no way annoys my partner.
Well, I figured what I should do would be to come up with some gift that would bring together your two loves of your new kitty and cars. And so what I've come up with is a very advanced custom electronic installation for your vehicle that will provide a neural link between your cat and the car's entertainment system. Now, you could...
Wow! Right,
you could regard this as an upgrade from sat-nav to cat-nav, which, of course, it is.
Nice!
I had to get that in there. And, of course, I know that you would love to have Kitty in the car, keeping you company while you're driving around. On the downside, let me just point out that this will require a neural implant for Otter the kitty.
Okay, so I have to shoot something into
you have
her
to,
head.
Yes,
okay,
you have to have
that
surgery
is difficult,
on the cat.
Yes.
Also, this would enable your cat not just to give you directions all the time, which will probably be the opposite of whatever directions it gave you 2 minutes ago, because it will have changed its mind. Also, your cat will be able to remind you constantly exactly what it thinks of your choice of vehicle and of the standard of your driving, which we know will be... well, hey, it's a cat. We know what a cat is going to say.
Awful, not nowhere near.
So, enjoy.
And I'm guessing I'll be able to know exactly when she wants to lick her own arsehole.
That's a version two.
Well, you really need that. You really want that, don't you? That's going to make your journey a lot more pleasant, isn't it?
Merry Christmas, fellas.
I don't want it when she's sitting on my chest and just does it.
Yikes.
Oh, good. You're rimming yourself. Well done, animal. Bravo.
Did you enjoy your Christmas present, Alex?
It's delightful.
Zog. That's a warped mind that came up with that. Well done, Zog. Well done. I've gone for something slightly simpler, slightly more straightforward, if I'm honest, for you, Zog. Let me see if I can engineer this now. Hang on a moment. Here we go. I've got a link here. Now, in our universe, I'm going to send you this link via the chat function in Skype, right? But in the Unspeed universe, I'm literally going to teleport one of these vehicles across to you now. All I'm going to say, here comes your gift, Zog. And I know you love a Porsche.
Oh, wow. That is foul.
I can't wait to see what Zog says.
A Porsche pickup?
That's awful. That hurts my soul.
No.
Merry Christmas.
No, it is horrible.
How do you feel about pickups?
You know how I feel about pickups. Listen, hey, they are great in their place, but
it's foul.
But their place is not behind or under a Porsche badge.
I knew there would be only one Porsche that you would never like, and that would be a pickup, and I thought that would be the worst possible present. I think I was probably correct. However, be reassured that this Porsche pickup that I found on the internet for you on the autoevolution.com website is simply a rendering. It's someone extrapolating the idea that the Amarok, being related to Volkswagen, being related to Porsche, could be developed into a high-performance pickup with a Porsche front end from the Cayman, or not the Cayman, what's
the
that?
Cayenne.
And the back end of an Amarok. And I think it looks great, man. I love a pickup.
Yeah, well, this is one of those areas where we differ. I mean, the Cayenne's bad enough. If you're going to butchering it and turning it into a pickup, oh, no. Thank you, but no thank you.
Alex, I've got something for you, but I believe you've got something.
I have. Well, I have things for both of you, but
do Zoggy first.
On theme of everything being just slightly dreadful, Zog. I mean, Gareth. I was worried he was usurping me, but we've talked about perfect cars for you in London. We both live in the same city where smallness and smartness is kind of a thing. It's not a Porsche,
right?
But I think your new city runaround, it's a twofold gift because first, I need you to do an HGV license, and then I'm going to give you your actual present, which is the new EV Hummer. A 200 kilowatt hour battery with a range that's woeful. I think it's 1.5 miles per kilowatt hour. That's, in general city driving. So you will need to fill it up constantly, but you do need the HGV license to do it because it does weigh 5 tons.
Wow.
That's a truly horrible.
Yes.
Awful.
Yes.
Terrible gift.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes. Yes.
I can see you chucking around Fulham in that zone.
I don't think I'd be able to get past the width restrictions.
No, no, but you drive it over them. That's the wonderful thing. I could have gone for a Cybertruck, but even I think that's a step too far.
Now, Gareth. Okay, do Gareth.
Now, Gareth, for you, we were talking about why you bought your lovely cactus, because the roads where you are lumpy and bumpy, and anything remotely low or sporty would just be destroyed and you'd be stranded. So what I've done for your Christmas present is I've come to your house late at night and stolen your Citroen C4 Cactus and replaced it with an M505 Adam Brothers Probe 16, the car from The Clockwork Orange. So low, if it looks at a speed bump, you're stuck. 12-inch wheels on the front, 15 on the back. It's only 34 inches tall.
Of course! Oh,
that but it was in a Kubrick movie. That's an amazing present.
Yes, but he can't drive it anywhere. Yeah. It's useless. It just sits there staring at him. And it's now his only mode of transport.
It literally wouldn't get out of my ramp drive. No. It genuinely wouldn't. It would beach itself.
It's the game of evil genie. Like, okay, you can ask for what you want, but I will somehow make it bad.
I know that car. It was actually based on a real British car. I can't remember what the real British car
was. Oh, it's a Marcos something, I think. I was looking at it now.
No, I don't think it was a Marcos. I want to say Nova, but I know that's wrong. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't.
Well, they only made 3 of them. It was a thing that you could buy.
And one of them was at the Design Museum for the Kubrick exhibition a few years
ago. I was there. Yeah. I was there, having just seen one in the Peterson Museum in Los Angeles some 3 weeks earlier. I went to the one in London and there was one there as well. I want to find out what it's called now. I can't remember. The Probe 16. Oh, it was designed by former Marcos cars designer Dennis and Peter Adams.
Yeah. Yes, it was Marcos people that did it. But it's their car because they went, well, we can go lower. And somehow they did. And they only built 3. So.
But I think it was the Durango 95, wasn't it? That was its alternative.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. Yeah, amazing.
That was what it was called in A Clockwork Orange.
Hopeless. That's the most useless
thanks
present.
Thanks for nothing.
So enjoy your gifts. They're absolutely useless for both of your use cases.
And the worst thing about it is I really would love that car. It would be no use to me whatsoever.
None at all. It'll sit there on your drive and you're not allowed to have any other cars.
Right then, Alex. Touché, my friend. Here we go. It's arguably worse than you think. I'm going to send you a link via the chat screen. Right, here it comes.
Oh! Thanks, I hate it.
It's even worse than you realise.
Job done.
job done, because that was what I said was a step too far for Zog.
Not only is this gift the Tesla Cybertruck, probably the vehicle you hate most in the world, by the man you hate most in the world, but it's even worse because I have genuinely signed you up for updates. You're on the Tesla mailing list for any plans they may have for when that vehicle becomes available in Britain or Europe in any way, which it probably doesn't at the moment. So there's a stay of execution. But the great thing about this gift, it's the gift that keeps on giving, that eventually when it does become available and you've forgotten about it, you'll start to get mails.
I'll start to get
tell you
awful emails. You know, they're just like, "Dear Alex, we know you're probably divorced. Please have this giant sadness box. Everyone will think you've got a big willy and that you're really cool and they won't think you're really sad and lonely. P.S. Please don't crash it because you'll do some serious damage to yourself. Maybe subject to Euro NCAP testing. Dunno. Can't legally say it's dangerous. But I've seen someone slice carrots on the sharp edges. So, you know."
Yeah.
Fuck's sake, that's awful.
Done.
That's vile. Bravo. I genuinely hate it. And the fact I am going to get emails about this has just made my day bad.
Right.
Awesome.
Boys, I'm going to ask you to raise your glasses as we toast and discuss our hopes for the future. Now, I've got a nice Coca-Cola here, because I'm going to go straight into editing this programme immediately afterwards, so I can't be drinking and driving, although I did have a taste of plum wine earlier.
I'm glad you said wine.
Yeah, well, plum wine, yes. Alex, what do you hope for the future?
This hangover to go away first, and that the kitten remains healthy and happy. And continues to sleep on my side of the bed.
And in terms of the car
world?
If I
can be deeply, deeply nerdy, I hope this ZEV mandate stuff gets sorted. because it's doing a rather good job of destroying the UK car industry at the moment, because people are being forced to produce cars that they can't sell and then sell them at prices that are barely making one any profit, and it is very, very, very noticeably screwing up the car industry. So that, so let's sort out ZEV. Cheers.
Well, I think we've got to get over that hump that, you know, beyond the early adopters, the mass market hump. China has already done it and is producing electric cars at a price that we can't in Europe. And it's a price thing. And once that happens and you can buy a Lecky car for 25 grand, that'll do 300 mile range.
Yeah.
That sorts that out. Not from a legislative point of view, just from an engineering and economics point of view. That's how I see it.
But for the moment, ZEV is like, I will always be a fierce EV supporter. I think they are a good thing. But having had a sit down with someone who knows a lot more about these things than I do, he showed me a very scary graph.
The British motor industry has 6 months left. That's the trajectory. Zog, your hopes for 2025, what, that we still have a British motor industry too?
I think I pretty much said it earlier. Lewis Hamilton for Formula One champion with Ferrari in 2025. One simple wish.
That's a dream. Easy. As much as a hope, isn't it?
Yeah, wow. It's an aspiration. I'm not going to be disappointed if it doesn't happen, but that would be fantastic.
I have two hopes for the future. One is that I can simply find the time to watch every F1 race and sprint race in the coming season, because I missed some of them this year and had to watch them on catch up. And I love the thrill of watching it live, but it's hard with so many races. So I hope I have the time to do that. And my other hope is that you two, my dear friends, who I miss so dearly because I don't get to see in the flesh as often as I used to, that you will join me for season 21, which is the 20th year of Gareth Jones on Speed in 2025.
Bloody hellfire. Wowza. Go on then.
Are you up
for
it?
I'll see you next year.
Yes, I'll see you next year.
My hopes and dreams have been realised, and I'm going to do something special, right? There's going to be something special. We're going to go live. We're going to really go live.
Oh, God.
And there will be music, and there will be an event, and there will be a gig, and there will be a gathering, and it's going to be huge.
Are you going to make Richard Porter sing again? Because I enjoyed that thoroughly the last time.
If I can drug him up to the eyeballs to do so, I will. If that's what it takes, that's what I'll do, yeah. But yeah, that's part of the plan. He doesn't know that yet, but now he does.
Hi, Rich. You're singing.
Listen, boys, I love you. Cheers.
Cheers, boys. Cheers, cheers, cheers. Cheers.
Boys, thank you for 2024, and all the best for 2025, and I wish the same to our glorious listeners. Thank you for subscribing, thank you for spreading the word, share, like and subscribe, and we'll catch you for more On Speed in the future. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, Happy Festivus.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whiz Bang.